Welcome to the Walt Weekly Podcast with your host, Walter Latham Sr. and co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Today we have a special guest, Lindsay Peel, MBA, PMEC, is a results-driven finance coach, international speaker, author, and Black wealth advocate. She wears a lot of hats. We have not even gotten into half of the stuff she does. She received her BA in broadcast journalism from Howard University, her MBA from the University of Maryland Global Campus, and her certification in women's entrepreneurship at Cornell University. Welcome, Lindsay, to the Walt Weekly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello, hello, everyone. Yes, it's such an honor to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I see, looking at your bio, I mean, you have tremendous accomplishments, and I don't think you... Are you 25 yet? I don't think you're 25.
I like that. I'm going to say I'm 24
That's
and a
right.
half.
There you go.
Young gun, man. What generation are you from, actually? I'm a baby boomer. I don't know. What are you?
I'm a millennial.
Okay. All right.
Well, anyway, we were looking so much forward to having you on the show. We finally got you on the show. And I want to just, you know, extend our gratitude for you being on the show. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Definitely.
All right, man. So I can see, you know, from your background that you're a finance person.
Yes,
and y'all guys doing some good stuff with, what is it, Kiva? And what does that stand for? K-I-V-A.
So Kiva, we are an international microlending nonprofit organization. That is my full-time job. So at Kiva, I serve as the entrepreneurial ecosystem manager. I currently support a portfolio of 42 community organizations that houses our microlending program. And I support about 50 capital access managers, which these are the hub staff members that goes out as the face of Kiva in the local community. So ultimately, we are a fintech. And we have a small business lending product. Here in the United States, we have a small business loan up to $15,000, 0% interest, no collateral needed, no minimum credit score, no minimum or maximum revenues involved for the business, to really give entrepreneurs an opportunity to get the access to capital that they need to build their business, even when they don't come from trust funds or they don't have, you know, investors in their family or a lot of assets with collateral to potentially be used. We believe in financial inclusion. So we want to make sure that no matter where they are, have an opportunity to get access to capital. So I am very, very honored to be a part of Kiva. I like to share my Kiva story whenever I do speak about it, because it's really just a full circle moment. During my time as a business banker, I met the Kiva Capital Access Manager at the location here in Baltimore. And while I was a banker, of course, I had to unfortunately decline some entrepreneurs for bank capital. Everybody's not quite ready for lending from a financial institution, of course, with traditional underwriting requirements. And I would send my clients to my Kiva partner, whoever would get declined on the bank side, I would send them to Kiva to get access to capital. Shortly after that, maybe about 2 or 3 years after that, I transitioned out of banking at the end of 2020, and I started my financial consulting firm, Kingdom Vision Consulting, where we support BIPOC entrepreneurs in both personal and business finance. And I became a contractor for the organization who was the Kiva partner here in Baltimore. And then early in 2023, I actually fully funded my own Kiva loan. So we have a crowdfunding platform. And I fully funded my own Kiva loan at the top of last year. And it was really an awesome opportunity. So I am a part of the communities that we are looking to serve at Kiva. And then last year in April, I joined the team internally. So it's definitely an honor and a pleasure. I love the work that we do. I live and breathe this work to make sure that entrepreneurs like you and I have an opportunity to build a legacy for their families, making sure that they have an opportunity to create financial stability, sustainability, where they can can scale, where they can accumulate assets, where they can pass down something to their heirs. It's intentional. And Kiva is just one line, one way that I am able to do this work.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You said you also help organizations as well?
I do. So in Kiva, our organizational partners are what we call like ESOs, entrepreneurial services organizations. So these are CDFIs, community development financial institutions. They are women's business centers. They are city agencies with economic development offices. And what they do is these organizations become our partners at Kiva. So they ultimately become the face of Kiva in their local communities while having our back end access to support them and their entrepreneurs with the lending process.
Amazing. That's fantastic.
So now Kiva, I've never heard of that. Are they a nonprofit or for profit? They're probably a nonprofit. Just guessing.
That is correct. We are a nonprofit organization. We are international. I specifically work on the US team, but we do serve in over 80 countries.
Yeah, I never heard of Kiva. I don't know why. I've heard of microloans before.
So we are a microlender. That is exactly what we do. So our loan is considered a microloan. That's exactly right.
Ah, okay. Okay. And what are the caps? There got to be a cap on it, or is that driven by the geography? I mean, what kind of caps do y'all have?
The lending caps are general, regardless of where you're based in the United States. But we go up to $15,000.
Well, that's good to see, buddy. Yeah, I can work with that. Yeah,
absolutely.
So tell me. All right, I just want you to describe a transaction for me, okay?
Okay.
And Kiva is in your silo. Well, I wouldn't have to say silo. That's incorrect. In your space, you deliver funding to minority women business owners. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. We serve everyone, but we do have a very special focus on the marginalized communities. So whether that's women, Black people, Latinx communities, wherever you fall in that marginalized space, we serve you. We're actually looking for you. We want the entrepreneurs who have been declined for traditional bank capital. We want the entrepreneurs who do not come from legacy finance.
Yes. So the entrepreneurs that you deal with, is it just local or is it nationwide?
So Kiva, we work with entrepreneurs nationwide. There are only two states in which we do not lend right now, and that is Nevada and North Dakota. If you're located anywhere else across the United States, you can absolutely take advantage of our product.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. So what inspired you to do what you do?
Oh, that's a really great question, Ms. Michelle. And if I have the time, I'll take it back just a little bit. So I'm from a very small town. I'm from a very small town in North Carolina called Windsor. Very under-resourced, almost kind of like a retirement city. And after seeing how my parents created a business to take care of me, it really is. It's become my driving force. So my father is a plumber and my mom has been running the business for over 20 years. And that business is the reason why I am here today. Fast forward to graduating from high school, I attended Howard University. And one summer while I was looking for an internship, I actually found a part-time job opportunity to work as a teller. And I fell in love with the opportunity to meet and engage with people in the community around money. Because, of course, a lot of us do not talk about money at the kitchen table. A lot of times our parents, our grandparents were not necessarily financially literate. So it's a conversation that in our community, we typically sweep under the rug. And I enjoyed being able to engage with people in that way, to teach them about budgeting, to teach them about managing credit, using other people's money, OPM is what we call it in the industry, teaching them about how to invest, why it's important to invest. And I fell in love. So after graduating from Howard, I stayed within the banking industry and I was promoted, you know, pretty much every year while I was at the bank, working in pretty much every role within your traditional bank branch, starting as a teller and ending my banking career as a branch manager and managing two locations here in Baltimore City. So it's a part of me because my parents and their entrepreneurial journey, and because, you know, I was placed in that banking institution for a reason as a teller when I didn't even know why I was going to be there. And here we are almost a decade later, and I have been able to support a lot of entrepreneurs and their families.
Well, Michelle and I
That's
are bankers.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to say that. Well, she's like, she sounds like my story. So that's fantastic. I love it.
That's how we met. More than, you know, I don't want to give out big numbers, but, you know, some years back.
Some years back.
Yeah, we used to sit side by side. And I can recall a story when I used to go home to Williamston, North Carolina, which I guess is about 12 miles from Windsor.
Correct.
Right? So I'm from Williamston. So I used to go home, and people say, well, what do you do? And I said, well, you know, I'm in international banking. Oh, you're a teller, huh? So everybody thinks that if you work in a bank, you're a teller. But that's not the case.
That is not the case. Right. They don't know nothing about back office and foreign exchange, none of that.
Yeah,
exactly,
money markets, right. All that, you know, right. Investments, you know. So, I used to run into that when I was home. So, I mean, they say, yeah, you're a teller. But that's just the beginning, you know. But, yeah, we got similar backgrounds. Another thing you have that I saw that you know, piqued my interest a little bit was your PMEC.
So Project Management Essentials Certified. So a big part of my role, I haven't gone into PMP yet, becoming a project manager, but I do a lot of management of projects, a lot of management of systems, especially as an entrepreneur as well. So I consider myself a dualpreneur. So I do work full time, but I am parallel in my industry. So my consulting practice, I support those same entrepreneurs, right? Those same BIPOC entrepreneurs who come from marginalized background with limited resources, and making sure that they have access to personal and business credit financial resources. And in Kingdom Vision Consulting, we have a 5-prong approach, 5 areas of finance that we focus on with all of our clients, known as CLASS. So credit worthiness, long-term wealth, asset protection, strategic banking relationships, and strategic asset accumulation. So really being able to make sure that entrepreneurs understand the importance of managing their personal credit, being able to establish business credit, making sure that they're planning for retirement, because most entrepreneurs do not. They will use that 401k to start the business, and then they never start saving again for retirement.
Amen. I'm the victim. I definitely did that.
Yeah.
Put all my money in my business. So yes, right. I get it.
Yeah, we were talking about the project manager. Do you know, I don't know, will you get a chance to check us out on LinkedIn?
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay. So you know why I'm alluding to LinkedIn, right? That PMP is up there, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you make me feel so old, but you're so respectful.
No,
I love
you. No.
Sorry. I'm that old.
You
guy,
know,
yeah.
I'm a yes, no,
she said, Miss Michelle. I'm like, oh, right. Yeah. It's the mannerism.
That's the South. Yeah, that's it. They got that respect. And I
that's all right.
It.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
You can take me out of Carolina, but you can't take the Carolina out of me.
There you go. Same here. I'm the same way. But, you know, going back, as you were saying,
yes, sir.
I wanted to talk about a transaction. Okay. So I'm a person in a small town in Berkeley County, North Carolina, and I'm looking at, you know, I need a loan because I got a little farm going on and I want to sell produce, and I need, let's say, $15,000. So tell me how to go about getting that loan.
Absolutely. That's a really great question. So once you have established your interest, the first thing that we would want to know is if we have a hub in that location. And the reason why I say that is because when you are a part of our hub market, which means there is an organization that offers the Kiva program through their services, then you're able to work directly one-on-one with the capital access manager to support your application.
Now, how would they know?
So Once you start the application online, because we're online, we're fintech, everything that we do is digital. Once you start the application, you have to enter in your zip code. Your zip code is going to automatically group you either with the hub, if you're in a hub market, or it's going to send you to what we call our general hub market, which means the Kiva team fully takes care of your application. You don't necessarily get one-on-one assistance. So let's just say in Bertie County right now, we technically don't have a hub. So if you're in Bertie County and you're looking to apply for a loan, you will go to our website at kiva.org. You would create a profile, right? And once you create your profile and start your application, of course, it has general questions about you, your business, your time in business, any revenues. But the biggest piece, the most important piece about the application, especially with Kiva, because we're a crowdfunding platform, is your story. We're going to ask you for your personal story. Who are you? Why you created the business? How are you inspired by this business? Then we're going to ask you your business story. And this is where you get specifically into the weeds of the business itself. And why are people looking, or why should people lend to you ultimately? So these stories are what's going to be produced on our profile once you get through the application process. So you establish your story, then you go through what we call Kiva review, which is the underwriting process where we're reviewing your financials, we're reviewing your story, heavy on your story, we're reviewing your social media, do you have a website? If you don't have those things and you're looking to establish those things with the funds, that's okay too. You would let us know in what we call your loan use description. So there will be some line items that you will have to complete to say, hey, I want to use this $15,000 for marketing, inventory, to hire someone, whatever the case may be. Once you get through the Kiva underwriting process, you will receive an approval email, and that email will tell you how much you've been approved for. You might have been approved for the full $15,000, or we could counter offer you with something less based on what we find in your application. Once you accept the terms of the loan amount that you've received, then we take you through what we call PFP. This is our private fundraising period. And this is where social capital and social underwriting steps in. Because before you get launched on our actual platform, you have to make it through PFP first. In PFP, you will be given a certain amount of people that you have to bring into your folds, your ecosystem, rather. Those people will have to lend to your loan. The minimum is $25. So let's just say you have to bring in 10 people to lend to your loan before you get advanced to public. You would have to bring in those 10 people. They would have to lend to you a minimum of $25. Once you hit your number of people, you automatically advance to our public website. On our public website, we have over 2 million lenders who are ready to lend to you and your business. Again, on that platform, what they're going to see in your profile is they're going to see a picture, because you have to submit a picture as a part of your application process. They're going to see your personal story and they're going to see your business story. Those things are so important because let's just say most of your lenders aren't going to know you. Realistically speaking, most borrowers that get funded through Kiva, they know a very small percentage of people who lent to them. And usually it's the people that you actually brought in through the PFP phase. After that, it's people lending to you from all over the world. So for example, when I did my Kiva loan in early 2023, I had about 414 lenders contribute to my loan. There was a very, very small fraction of those people that I actually knew. But what gets people motivated to lend to you is the story, is the picture. They want to hear about you. They want to know about the impact that this loan is going to create in your business and in your family. Once you are fully funded through our platform, you receive an email, congratulations, you've been fully funded. And then we go through the disbursement process. We currently use PayPal for all of our transactions. So you'll receive your funds via PayPal, and then you're able to use those funds to grow your business.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Michelle, you have any questions on that?
No. She explained it in full detail. What can I ask about that?
All right.
Everything is completely digital. Everything is through our platform. We're a financial technology firm. So, you know, everything is online.
Excellent. But now, I think one thing that I did catch that I still want to question is the fact that these borrowers initially would have to bring in more people. Am I correct?
So when you say more people,
it's PFT.
PFP, yep. So PFP, the private fundraising period, they're bringing in their initial people. So they bring in the people on the front end. And the amount of people that you are assigned, it depends on a few factors. It depends on, one, the amount of your loan that you've been approved for. It also depends on your geographic location. Are you in a rural community? Are you in a city? So those things kind of make up. It's a few other factors as well, how excluded you are financially. But once our algorithm creates that number of people that you have to bring in at PFP, that's really your biggest part, right? Creating a great profile and bringing in your people through PFP, because everything else is pretty much taken care of for you.
Okay. So, question: the people that they're bringing in, are they other entrepreneurs?
So they are whoever you want them to be. So they are your family, your friends, your clients, other peers in the community. And what this does is, this is for us, it's almost like proof of concept, right? Do you have people who believe in what you're doing in your business? And I have some people that say, well, Lindsay, you know, my family doesn't believe in me, or, you know, I don't have family to necessarily ask. Well, as an entrepreneur, you have to build a network in general, because if you don't, you're not going to have a successful business anyway. So it's about networking. It's about making sure that you are comfortable with sharing your story, talking about your business. A big part of making any type of crowdfunding campaign work is marketing and word of mouth. Do you talk about your business? Do people know what you do? You can have the best product out there in your mind, right? But if you don't have proof of concept, if people don't know that it exists, then how do you plan to generate income? So that's a part, really. PFP is really still a part of the underwriting. It's the social underwriting piece. Especially because we're not a traditional lender. So your credit score is not a hard determining factor. We have borrowers that get approved and move forward through the process in the 400s and the 500s with their credit score. So we still kind of have to have something that adds that layer of risk, right? Risk management for us. And a lot of times that's through the PFP process.
Okay. And now I understand it. Excellent. I see that y'all are doing some good works. Okay. Another question comes to mind here is, you're in Baltimore, Maryland, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
You don't stay in the suburbs? Are you right in the urban area?
I am right downtown, literally right here in the Inner Harbor.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. You know, I got two sisters and a brother in Baltimore.
So awesome. I've been there. Well, you'll have to come visit me next time.
No, it's been a long time. But I like the harbor. I like the crabs. My sister, they break up all the crabs, you know, and put them in a position where I can eat them.
Yes, sir.
So, I love Baltimore. It's a very nice town.
It's a very beautiful city. A very beautiful city full of life and opportunity here.
Lindsay, as you look out at our environment, the economic climate that we're in, what do you see from your purview?
Listen, that's a very loaded question, right? From an entrepreneurial perspective, from a Black community perspective, from just a world perspective in general.
Specifically from a finance perspective.
From a finance perspective, I think we're still very much so in an interesting space. You hear a lot of conversation about, you know, the recession that's underway, that's happening, right? That has partially already started. I personally think that we're in a season of, especially from a community, when we think about who Kiva serves as marginalized entrepreneurs, we're being forced to reevaluate our finances in a very different way. And I say that because COVID really shed a lot of light on what we've been missing in our financial foundation. a lot of it is the systems, right? The systems, we've been disenfranchised on purpose. The systems were not created to work for a lot of marginalized groups of people. And COVID really showed us that, hey, if we don't take control of ourselves, our financial knowledge and our financial literacy, making sure that we are able to understand the importance of how money works, why money is important, why it should be used as a tool, then we're going to forever suffer. I was just at a presentation not too long ago, and one of the data points really stuck out. They said that if our current consumer habits stay the same, okay, as a community, we're not going to have any type of net worth at all by 2053, meaning we will be worth $0, especially as a Black community, if our consumer spending habits remain the same. Because we are mostly consumers versus being mostly producers out here in the economy. We make everybody else rich because we're spending all the money, right? We are trying to keep up with the Joneses. We are trying to get the nice car. We're living above our means. And that's not a safe measure for us. That's why right now, currently, especially when it comes to marginalized communities and specifically us as Black people, we have to start over every single generation. There is nothing to be passed down from one generation to the next. We cannot talk about or think about building generational wealth if we don't start and do our part today. If you are not taking care of your finances today and building a solid financial structure to develop this financial home, what are you going to have for your heirs, for your nieces, and for your nephews? Nothing. So it is so important that we take advantage and we honestly take ourselves accountable to becoming more financially educated. There was a lot of money that went out to the community during the times of COVID, during the times of George Floyd. But guess what? A lot of that money is drying up. Okay. A lot of those grants are drying up. Lending terms have gotten even stricter. If it was already hard to get bank capital, it's even harder now to get bank capital. So it's a very interesting time, but I think it's a very interesting time for us because we're really seeing the importance, the super importance of taking our finances seriously. It's we have no more time to just live paycheck to paycheck or even in business living from one transaction to one transaction. We have to be longstanding in how we think about money and what we wanted to do for our families and generations to come.
All right. You hit the nail on the head. I agree. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head because and Michelle will tell you and she will attest to the fact that we've done a few shows on financial wealth within our community. All right, trying to gain it, attain it rather, and trying to be in a position that we could make our heirs better off than we were, right? That's a big thing.
Generational wealth, yes.
Right,
yes.
That's a big thing for us. And, you know, we preach, and this is adding to it. If you just want to just keep the message out there, just keep banging against that door of spending carelessly and not thinking about the future. I think one of our major, we live too much in the now. Don't lean forward,
Right.
And that's a mindset that I think that has to be taught, has to be drilled into our people. And I refer to our people as a tribe. We belong to the tribe, okay? Right. And that tribe is American descendants of slavery. We are descendants from slaves. I don't know about you, but you from Windsor, in all probability, you are descended from slaves like me, okay?
Absolutely.
So we are a tribe, okay? So everything should be tribal, all right? Without people like you providing services, funding to the people that need to be, all right, that have been ignored, all right? And they don't have access to capital. So what you're doing is a major, major undertaking, and I'd like to thank you for that right now, okay?
Yes, definitely. Thank you. You know, I want to piggyback off what you just said, financial freedom. We don't have any financial education in the Black community either. So that has been an issue. I know I didn't have it growing up. My younger brothers did. But, you know, when you come from a big family, your parents are too busy back in this, I guess I'm saying my age, back in the 60s. They're too busy raising their children. You know, they weren't taught that either. You know, they were just taught how to survive. Right?
That's right.
So, yeah.
All right.
You're so right.
Education.
Education, even what you just said, we were taught how to survive. So we have to also acknowledge that there is some unlearning that we have to do so that we can create more space to relearn new things and new habits. Because being in survival mode, you don't know how to thrive. Being in survival mode, you kind of develop the scarcity mindset. You don't believe that you are worthy of abundance, or when it comes, you don't know what to do with it, right? I was literally just listening to someone the other day, and she said, I went from working at Dunkin' Donuts to making, you know, over 70-80K working this job and didn't know what to do with it, right? We also have to learn that while today's situation may be one thing, we are preparing for what's next to come. What are you doing in that waiting season? What are you doing in that preparation season? What are you learning? What are you exposing yourself to? And a lot of times, if the next person beside you, if your auntie or if your cousin or your friend from the neighborhood, if they don't have anything else that can help you, you have to be willing to go outside of your norm to get what you need. You might not be able to get advice from your uncle who you know you've never seen really have anything financially. So maybe we do need to walk into a branch and talk to a branch manager or a banker, right? Maybe we need to go to this networking event at a local chamber of commerce to meet someone else different to change our conversation.
Okay. Yeah, I've always said, and I've told my wife this many times, is that the young will set us free. And I'm talking about the young, and I'm talking about people such as yourself and younger. It's a younger generation. The older generation, we've been fighting to try to raise y'all, to make sure you got an education, to make sure you got clothes on your back and you got an opportunity and you prepare for life. Okay, now it's time for y'all guys to start carrying that water, all right? Up that hill, all right? Because I know it's going to be y'all. All right. And I take great solace in that. It's going to be the younger generation that saves the African-Americans. Okay.
Yeah, they are making the money. The younger generation is making the money. But the patterns that we were shown, it's not instilled in them.
They're
spending it at the same time. So they need education on both ends. You know, they need our grandmothers and, you know, education knowledge. And we need their knowledge for finance on how to make the money. But we need to teach them how to keep it.
Right, but we need you know, standard bearers out there such as yourself, Lindsay, that are, yes, what sir. You're saying is you're preaching to the choir with us. Yes, okay, sir. All right, and
yes,
you're going right to the root cause of the problem. Okay, and that's now we live for the now. You know, I mean,
right.
Like you said, we're consumers.
That's right.
I think if you would take the amount of money that we spent in a year, now y'all guys got to double check me, and I got a friend of mine that's a friend of the show always saying, "Oh, you." Y'all got to check. Now, I'm going to say this, but you got to go and check. That if you look at the wealth of the average family of families, and you look at it across races, white, brown, black, Mexican, whatever, we are the lowest in terms of wealth.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, because we're so busy spending our money.
Yeah.
African-American, we spend billions of dollars, especially in the hair care industry.
Yeah.
Which is an industry I'm in, so I can vouch for that. But we're very wasteful. We're keeping up with the Joneses, like you said, Lindsay, earlier. You know, it's what you have, name brands. You know, I don't care about name brands. Quality is good. I'm going to spend the money. But I'm not going to spend it just to have the person's name. It could be a famous name and the quality sucks, you know. So
That's right.
Do keep up with the Joneses. We don't pay ourselves first. And I had to learn that over the years as an entrepreneur as well.
That's right.
Pay yourself first, you know.
That's right.
Pay yourself first, pay your bills second, and then waste your money on dumb stuff.
after you put money in retirement, right? Because another thing too, I think, where we run into a wall is that we hear just save, or what does save mean? Because you also cannot just save your way to wealth, because right now banking institutions aren't giving you anything for your money, right? It's 0.001% of an interest rate. So saving and putting it in an account to do what? So it's also after you save XYZ dollars for this goal, now we're taking this money and investing it into real estate or investing it into an IRA of some sort. We have to be able to diversify our financial portfolios, because saving ain't the way either. And I think that that's because, you know, a lot of our family members, they didn't invest. They didn't understand how to invest. We don't understand the stock market. But one thing about the stock market, that it's been consistent, right? It's been very consistent. Yes, it can be volatile. Yes, there will be downward moments. But guess what? It's coming back. So it's also about the time that you have to invest. How much time do you have, right? Do you have time to recover if the market was to go down? But we also have to expand our knowledge about that, right? Even when it comes to credit, a lot of times our families will tell you, don't trust credit cards, don't get them. But they also didn't tell you, I'm telling you not to get them because I messed it up and I can't teach you how to do better. So it's also being able to understand the things that were said and understand the things that were not said as well. Because a thing, right? I talk to a lot of people, and sometimes even if they have family members who are good with money, y'all know sometimes what you tell kids, stay in a child's place. This is none of your business, right? So if you're not showing us how to budget, if you're not showing us what to do with your paycheck, how do you allocate your savings? What does it even look like to write a check? How do we use a bank account? If we're also not learning those things, then we can't help it, right? So it's, I think it's a multi-pronged approach that we have to take when we think about curing and healing our financial relationships and our communities. But it takes everyone, right? It needs an intergenerational approach. I need you, Mr. Walter. I need you, Ms. Michelle, just like you all need what I contribute to the table too. But it's about finding a common ground, right? For us to understand that our experiences, our level of knowledge, they're all valuable. But how do we intertwine it in a way where you don't feel like what I'm saying is invalidating your experiences, but also vice versa, too, just because I'm young?
I got you. I hear you. What would you tell my generation, all right, the baby boomers? Michelle's younger than, much younger than me, so she's not, you know. But what would you tell us? Where are we falling short? And I heard you allude to the fact that we're not teaching how to have a bank account. But what do you see? How could you leverage the older generation?
I think that, one, the best way is through dialogue. I don't think enough of us are even having conversations, right? I have done several podcast interviews at this point. But I've never really had deep and intentional conversation with those from generations that are my seniors. So talking to baby boomers about this, right? It just really doesn't happen that much. Y'all think millennials, well, they focus too much on the phone and social media and all these other things. But hey, we also bring a lot to the table as well. But then you also, I can acknowledge, you have people in my generation, oh, I don't want to talk to them. Oh, they don't understand, right? We have to even get comfortable in having conversations. Can we even have a dialogue together? Because if we can't even talk and understand each other and each other's experiences and actually listen and listen to understand and not listen to respond, then we're not going to get anywhere. So we have to start there. And it's acknowledging that, hey, yeah, we have a problem in our families. We have a problem in our communities. This is what I've seen in my generation. This is what worked. This is what didn't work. This is what we'd like to pass down. But also tell me more about what you're learning. How can I apply what you're learning and experiencing today to my life to also enhance what I already know? We have to be willing to exchange information. I always say, right, I'm very proud to have parents who are baby boomers. My parents had me after the age of 42. So all of my siblings are 20 plus years my senior, except one who's 13 years my senior. But my parents and I, we talked, they showed me, they had conversations. My mom took me to the bank to open up my bank account. I would see her make deposits for the business. I would see her write out bills and checks. I would see her prepare for tax time, right? But I was also willing to learn and listen. She was also willing to teach, because sometimes generations, we get annoyed with each other and we just don't feel like investing. But it takes a level of investment, right, to make sure that we get what we need. Why do you think we see so many other cultures, grandparents, great grandparents have trust funds for their great children, for their grandchildren or great great grandchildren, but they were able to teach their children, this is how you manage what I'm going to leave you? Because we've also seen a lot of people my age. So especially from an older and younger situation, right? So for example, I engage with a lot of people who receive family homes, right? Grandma fought real hard to keep this house while she was alive to take care of you all. But once you inherit the home, you lose it because you don't want to pay taxes. You arguing about who need to own what, but you also don't want to take financial responsibility.
Yep. Yep.
Right? So it's like we have to be intentional. We have to be intentional about how are we sharing this information. A touchy subject that we don't get on, right, is estate planning. Let's talk about what do we want to happen with our assets once we're no longer here. But we don't want to talk about death, which is the inevitable. We all got to go at some point, right? So let's talk about what that looks like. Where do you want your assets to go?
To support it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or a church fish fry. Yes. To pay for the funeral.
Thinking about it. Right. Exactly.
To pay for the funeral.
Right. We're not thinking about that long term, or if something happens, how do we survive past that? You know, my parents were like that. They definitely, you know, believed in life insurance, you know, to make sure, even if you have it together. My parents had it together. They were willing everything, but you always have one sibling. I always tell my parents, you had too many doggone kids. You know what I mean? So there's always one. You can have eight kids, eight houses, and one is still not going to be happy. So damn if you don't, you know, I'm telling you, that's why I'm like, I'm having one child, so you don't have to fight with anybody. But, you know, they did teach us that. But yeah, life insurance, a lot of people, they're walking around, they, you know, they have these cars, they're materialistic, they're keeping up with the Joneses, but they don't have insurance. Definitely.
Yeah. It's hard. It will never be a one answer cure at all, one conversation. It's multidimensional. But we need all of us to be a problem of creating the solution for us. And we can't wait for anybody else to come in and save us either. We have to create the solutions.
They're not going to
our problems. They are not going to.
They are not going to save us. If you're looking for, you know, somebody to swoop in and, you know, and take care of you or make things better. It's not going to happen.
Yep.
All right? It's not going to happen.
Absolutely.
I've always said that, you know, and I don't want anything from anybody. You know, I earn mine. Michelle has earned hers. You know, we earn. Nobody gives us anything.
Yes,
and I take great pride because, don't forget, we set examples for our younger generations.
That's right. We stand on your shoulders. We stand on your shoulders, and I appreciate you all just as much as you appreciate me, because we wouldn't be here without you all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this was very exciting. Lindsay, you know, what you're doing, I'm just so proud. And Michelle, I'll tell you, I'm very proud of young people that are positioned or trying to achieve like yourself. You know, I you know, there's many ways to do it. You know, there's many ways that I see y'all guys cooking. You're really boiling there. And I'm very proud and I'm very pleased, because I know that we have a legacy out there that's going to do what they got to do.
That's
people
right.
like you.
That's
and
right.
What generation you from again?
I am a baby. Not me about to say I'm a baby boomer. I'm a millennial.
You a baby boomer?
At heart.
You a millennial?
At heart.
I don't want to ask your age. You can tell me Gen B. You know, I'm just curious, because, I mean, we did a special. Michelle, you remember we did the Millennials? What was that we did? We did a couple of shows.
Yes, we did do a Millennial show. Yes, we did.
Yeah, we had a series.
I hate these titles.
Yeah.
I really do. Like,
yeah.
It's just unnecessary, because it's confusing, too.
Yeah, because, you know, the millennials, we had like three people that were very successful in their particular fields. And we did this millennial series, right? So, you know, I think we had one guy was a West Point graduate captain, and he's coming back on the show. Another one was an actress. I think Diamandi was one of the millennials that we interviewed.
Yes, Diamandi. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And there's one other one, I can't recall. We've done 220 episodes already.
Yeah, we did one on finance. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And this is our fifth year, and our fifth anniversary is in June. Believe it or not.
Time Happy anniversary! Congratulations, that is amazing.
Yeah, man, we've been out there.
It definitely does.
Yeah, it passes fast, man. Especially when you pass 40, man. Time just, you know what I mean. So,
right. When you're younger, you're like, I can't wait to grow up. Grow up, time is going by too fast.
Right. I'm like, I can wait.
Yeah, I mean, you get fast 40. I don't even celebrate birthdays after 40. I didn't. You know?
Now I know what they meant by take your time. Don't rush to grow up.
Yeah, now I know too. I definitely know. I definitely know. But I do want to give a shout out to Mr. Tracy Stokes, who recommended you as a guest on our show. And I'm so glad you accepted our invitation. But I do want to shout out to my cousin, Tracy Stokes, down in Williamson, North Carolina. And, and with that said, have you come back, and just give us some updates. Yeah, I want you to be part of the Walt Weekly family.
Well, yes, I would like her to shout out all her social media handles and your website where our audience can find you.
Yes, thank you for that. Also, too, thank you to Deacon Stokes. He was a big part of my church family growing up, my grooming, my upbringing. So thank you for being a part of my village and why I am the woman that I am today. Please follow me on Instagram at My Wealth Connector. My Wealth, WEALTH, Connector, CONNECTOR. You can also follow the business on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Kingdom Vision Consult. And if you're interested in a Kiva loan, we would love to have you. You could find us at www.kiva.org.
Excellent. Okay. That's our show for this week.